Welcome to Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. I'm Mark.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Ben.
And in this episode, porn, chicken,
yeah,
and dementia.
Yeah.
Obvious, right?
Yeah. All in one podcast.
Beautiful.
So, seriously, there's this story which is going around about Pornhub. Who wants to tell us the story about why we're talking about it?
Go on, Ben.
Oh, thanks, Paul. So this is a really interesting and very controversial stunt by Pornhub, who have done a collaboration with the charity Ocean Polymers, which is an anti-plastic sort of beach and ocean cleaning sort of cause. And effectively what they've done is they've a famous porn couple who were sort of like, you know, infamous on the Pornhub site, they've shot a very an adult film on a beach which is polluted and covered and ruined by lots of plastic waste. And what they're basically saying is every time when you watch the film, all of the main juicy bits are covered up by bits of sort of plastic rubbish.
Bits of rubbish,
yeah. Bits of rubbish. And as you watch the film as it goes on, there are Pornhub helpers, shall we say, who are dressed
fluffers.
In... Fluffers. Well, they're not... I mean, it's the least attractive-looking fluffing outfit I've ever seen. They're buying sort of what is effectively sort of like anti-radiation sort of Pornhub suits.
I saw they've got white coats on.
White sort of, lab sort of testing kit sort of suits. Anyway... They, as the film goes on, they go and remove bits of plastic, so you start to see more and more of the actual film, and it's a full-on proper, porn. And for every view, a donation then is made by Pornhub to the Ocean Polymer the cause,
charity,
the organisation, the NGO, whatever it might be. And they're what they're saying effectively, and this is where it's really sort of contentious, is obviously Pornhub is not what you would call sort of particularly mainstream and sort of normal and orthodox way of raising money. But Pornhub have got sort of like, you know, they've done this quite a lot. They've done some pretty interesting sort of marketing campaigns. So from their perspective, it doesn't come as too big a surprise. I suppose the interesting thing is sort of like, how do people feel about this, you know, and actually will they see such a sort of an enormous result off the back of this? Because Pornhub as a media platform is enormous. I mean, people can deride porn as much as they like, and that's completely fair, because, you know, whether it's good or bad is not for debate. It's clearly a bad thing in terms of the damage it does to sort of young men and the sort of the obviously the contentious issue with sort of the role of women and the exploitation of women. But it has got an enormous audience. I mean, like, it absolutely dwarfs Netflix and sort of even like, you know, most social media channels. The people who spend time on Pornhub is quite frightening. So
I think that's why it's so interesting, isn't it? 'Cause it's kind of, that's why we sort of want to talk about this, because it is like, ooh, how do I feel about this? Because it's I feel a bit like the Paddy Power conversations we've had, where it feels a bit stunty. It is very stunty, very much PR led for them, but the potential to get that message out there to lots of people is on one hand a good thing, but what the platform it is on is incredibly controversial. I'm trying to find here actually a spokesperson for the charity, I think, was kind of, they don't mind where their donations come from. They sort of come out as quite ambivalent, I suppose.
Do you know what? This whole conversation is the epitome of ambivalent,
which we've discussed.
And I'm not joking, because you're saying, Ben, you're conflicted over this, because creatively it's a great idea. Wish I'd thought of that. I mean, go to like where there's literally billions of people watching it. But do I compromise my ethics in order to get the most amazing number of eyeballs?
There's some behavioural economics that you sort of, you're teased to see more. I feel weird talking about this, but in terms of the plastic slowly removed and you see more of the film. So there's some quite smart behavioural economics in that, and that you're teased to keep viewing.
Now, I fear to go here, but do you think there are people who get off on a combination of plastic waste and sex?
Well, we'll find out. And then that will create
a whole new eroticism.
Well, I mean...
Ooh, darling, when we get home, can we get some rubbish and take our clothes off?
Probably. I mean, to be fair, the anti-radiation suit's probably enough for some.
That's another fetish.
After that did sort of jar with me slightly, apart from the fact there were people having sex in rubbish.
Now, again, on a serious note now, do you think, maybe building on the point about extreme problems require extreme measures, to me, there's a kind of a karma about this, which is that the plastic waste is a result of the decay in our society. Mm. And the pornography that is currently being used is another example of the decay in our society.
Yeah.
And they're being smashed together to kind of create a good cause. Does that kind of, it's like offsetting.
Mm. It does feel very offsetting. They're probably sort of patting themselves on the back that, right, we've been full of controversy. And talking about them from an advertising media channel, you largely would have been just full of crap. So for them to be trying to do something different is...
So that's where I was going to go next with it. Do you think this is a very clever move by Pornhub to go mainstream in terms of, blimey, I can advertise Coca-Cola on Pornhub now?
Well, I definitely think it's more for... It's more about opening up their channel to other businesses, isn't it? Because we've proposed it as a sort of, although we did kill it before a pitch for a brand, because for a certain audience of a certain and mass in terms of sort of reach and what have you, it's, you can't deny it. It's an enormous channel. There is a bit of a segue and a bit of a sort of correlation into something that's happened in the UK very recently, which is the very cack-handed attempt by the Home Office to educate people about knife crime by advertising on chicken boxes within chicken shops, and it's widely derided as a racist and a sort of lazy attempt to try and sort of like show that they are trying to sort of, you know, beaten and get ahead of knife crime by trying to communicate with young kids in a place where they spend their time. And it just felt interesting because it's obviously like there are these kind of controversial media, and the chicken shop is a controversial media channel in this case, and quite rightly by all accounts has been completely sort of blasted by organisations and sort of, you know, and people as well for sort of being so tone deaf. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing to talk about because obviously you can see in the theory behind why the Home Office wanted to do this and wanted to trial what it was like and to see whether it would work. And you know, the response has obviously been particularly negative. But it's about, like, you know, people looking at interesting, or, you know, what will look to be interesting and sort of slightly controversial ways of communicating with people based on where people spend their time. Mm. And it's just, yeah, I think it's people are just like, it's interesting to see, and interesting to see whether it's done well and whether it's done badly and how people do it.
So where do we think it fell down though? Because obviously you can imagine in their very early stages it was like, this is an important message, let's think of outside of traditional media, and think outside of a Facebook link ad and try and do something different.
Well, it's
as in good start, then something went wrong in terms of at least their self-awareness and all that kind of stuff.
It's simply that. So you could imagine somebody looking at a media schedule and looking at the target audience. So what is the target audience? Let's be honest, it's young black men.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the most cost-effective way for me to reach young black men? Well, there is probably some classic media opportunities. But then somebody went, you know, in the same way that years ago we would have giggled over media at urinals and things like that. And that's now an accepted media channel.
Yeah.
Or media on the backs of toilet doors and stuff like that. So you can see how it kind of got going.
Oh, absolutely.
But
yeah,
you're right. There was that lack of self-awareness. But yet again, this is another example of me being ambivalent.
Yeah, I think...
It's an extreme problem and it needs some measures to try and solve it. Although... I would have thought it would be, you know, social stuff and education, and is perhaps more important than sticking an ad on a chicken.
Well, that's the point. So that's the main issue. But there's lots of sort of, it's easy to call it lazy and sort of like, you know, sort of racist in its sort of tone and style and its and what, how it's sort of been done. But it, actually, I think the main issue with it, and then there were some really interesting people on the news talking about it, was that this is not going to touch the sides of the actual issue. And the money that I think was spent, which is not, I mean, it wasn't huge, it was less than £100,000. Yeah, so it's about 75,000-80,000 pounds, okay? Mm. But even that would help sort of like fuel one of these organizations and initiatives that takes place within the actual community.
More of a grassroots kind of thing, which is where most people agree
that's where it's got to start. And that 80 grand could have been better spent, because they've actually, the biggest frustration I think people have found is that they, at the same time as doing this, they've cut funding to these initiatives. So these initiatives, which are doing genuine good and are doing amazing sort of work to actually really get to the root cause of how this happened, or sort of why this happens, and to help sort of build sort of new sort of structures within society to stop this from happening, or to try and prevent this from happening. They are so pissed off because they're like, well, why have you put your money into this, which is basically it looks like a PR stunt. Mm. and it, to show that you're trying to do something interesting and trying to do something where sort of, you know, where you think is going to make an impact. And it's just that lack of, as Paul said, lack of self-awareness about what actually, you know, how is this going to look and what value does it really add.
Welcome to Chicken Town.
Well, we just effortlessly sort of segue into another chicken story, but this one's slightly more play positive, slightly less contentious, and just more interesting in terms of a real quite quick shift from what felt like it was going to be sort of meat for the whole of its sort of, you know, as a standard, and now they've gone to meat-free. This is KFC with trialing meat-free nuggets and wings, vegan meat-free nuggets and wings.
This is a fascinating one, actually. Like, really, again, they're not the first to do it. I think, having done a bit of research, that Burger King have got the Impossible Whopper. You guys seen that?
Yeah.
Which is, again, I mean, if you look into the tech, it's quite impressive. They're doing everything they can to sort of replicate the cooking aroma, the taste, textures, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so this is KFC's meat-free store, I think, because it's San Francisco or something.
Yeah.
Very PR-led, but hopefully they've probably did it as a bit of a trial, and the videos I've seen this week, queues around the corner. If you've seen the branding of the store, it's quite veggie pret. It's all green. Oh, it's really gone from like white and red to white and green, which again looks quite nice from a branding perspective. But yeah, it's done. I guess if they're worried, is the demand going to be there? They've answered that pretty quickly. So I expect to see this sort of roll out. But yeah, what I found the most interesting was actually the growth of meat free options. I didn't know about Burger King, but that's been in place for a while. There's this amazing company called Impossible Foods,
yeah,
I think
they make the meat. They do these meat free burgers.
They do all the
Beyond Meat did the KFC one, I think they're called. But go on,
is that it? Okay,
yeah. No, but Impossible is the one that does the Burger King one.
So there's amazing, clever people in Silicon Valley that are doing interesting stuff with soy protein, all that kind of thing. And yeah, so I guess some of the other stuff I read into was that in the UK alone, actually, vegan takeaways have quadrupled in the last few years.
Wow.
So, yes, it might feel a bit of a risk to kind of trial a full restaurant that is kind of meat-free, but I don't think so, actually. I think there's more than enough evidence that whilst it is nowhere near mass market, the growth opportunity is very clear, and the need to do it from a sustainability perspective. It's becoming obviously the need to do it as a business, because the commercial businesses hold such a power to make a difference for the world, but also in terms of people's decision-making for brands, that the are they doing good in the world is only getting bigger and bigger and bigger in all studies. So it's the right thing to do, and I'm pleased it's been well received.
I think it raises a number of societal issues, which I think you were touching on, that as marketers we are ill prepared to actually know how to deal with. Let's just take this first one. So let's say this all goes according to plan, and KFC side by side sell their meat free product with their meat product. The kinds of people who are coming together in one KFC store who are completely polarized in their views about food. What does that mean for our shops when you've got, you know, people who passionately believe in their right to eat meat alongside vegans?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they call, I was even about the name KFC.
Yes, of course.
But they now, I think what they could do, obviously, is very simple, is that they could call it BFC, which is Beyond Fried Chicken.
There's only one Colonel in Chicken Town.
We all saw a story the other day that I think touched our hearts. Genuinely, I'm not being sarcastic, which was that someone had come up with this great idea of showing old TV ads to people who are suffering from dementia. And I know, I think certainly you and I, Paul, have got a personal relationship with dementia. I've got a 101-year-old aunt who is amazing and she has dementia. I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about her dementia in a moment. And I think it's a common known fact. So I go armed with old photographs. Actually, I go armed with the same old photographs every 2 weeks. And of course, she can't remember that I've not shown them to her before.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Which is good because I would have run out of photographs. And it immediately perks her up and we have a lovely chat and I feel a bit better about her situation and we connect and everything. So the idea of showing old ads to people, I think, is lovely.
Mm, and I thought exactly the same. I thought when I read this, just to back up your point, this is within my family at the moment, so it's close to my heart. And I first read it, and I was like, brilliant! That's an award winner straight away. They use the language in the stories around allowing. So these big brands like BP, Diageo, Britvic, they're allowing their adverts
ads to
for
be
press
used.
And TV.
Right, yeah.
But then you burst that bubble slightly.
I know,
made my heart sink a little bit because I thought this is fantastic. And it's, as you said, in terms of it's the right thing to do in terms of bringing in that sort of that older stuff. But go on. So it's
the History of Advertising Trust, which seems like an amazing
hat.
Seems like an amazing place. A friend of mine has been down there and looked at the stuff, and you know, he's doing some work with them to kind of help them with their archiving. I didn't know it existed, but it literally is an archive of our advertising history. And they've created, I think, if I understood it right, like a TV channel where people can access these old ads and this old advertising material. And the bit that made my heart sink too, Paul, was the fact that they're charging for it.
40 quid a month, is that right?
Actually, more than heart sink, that made me quite angry.
Yeah.
You know, like the this is a problem that needs help and can be helped. And actually, I was inspired to think about the Old People's Home for 4-year-olds that was on Channel 4. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That's actually become a thing now, right? It is now a thing.
Well, I mean, my...
Maybe it was before.
My mum's in a residential home at the moment, and the local school go into the home at least once a week because it's... I mean, apart from anything else, it's a distraction.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, who doesn't love seeing kids playing and having a good time?
Well, it was. It was great TV. It was heartwarming. I think probably the kind of... The professors are all over whether intergenerational kind of care can like help from like a I'm sure it can if it like having watched the TV show it definitely does, and it's great to see. So that it reminded me of that, which is this is a lovely low barrier to entry idea that is going to help a very, very difficult disease.
The HAT does need money probably make the service
work.
We'll
get donations then. People would support it.
We could have phoned seriously, we could have phoned Coca-Cola. We could have phoned, you know, sponsored by Coca-Cola. I don't know. Did they try to get sponsorship
for it? Well, not even sponsorship, but the fact that these brands are being, maybe it's not mainstream press, but they're in the press being documented, so it's good PR for the brand. In my opinion, that should be enough.
Don't be mean with the beans, Mum. Beans means Heinz.
It's time to do some advertising stuff, and as we do try every now and again, we're going to talk about a campaign that is not a tele campaign. In fact, it's more of a PR campaign. And because ambivalence is another theme of this particular episode, we're not ambivalent about it. Ben, you hate it.
Well, I just think it's not a very good idea. Let's be honest.
Tell the listener what the idea is.
What are you on about?
This is from a really interesting brand and business called Eve, the mattress company. And this is a classic PR stunt. They've created what is effectively a petition. It's a letter to government.
Lobbying.
I wanted to make it law.
It's
that
faux
You had a legal right to sleep or something.
Faux lobbying around the human right to slumber, which is about protecting our right to...
Why did they call it slumber?
I don't know.
That makes me think of pyjamas and nighties.
It just makes it sound a bit lazy.
Windsor pyjamas.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like...
Teddy bears.
It just does.
Is
it
that the right word?
I don't know. It didn't really sort of. I can see the sort of thinking behind it, but it does. It feels a slightly tenuous thing to sort of campaign around. Like,
but yeah, I saw this and I thought it's the wrong angle. The right angle, and as you guys know, I'm very passionate about sleep and the importance of sleep. So the right angle here is that the lack of sleep and the lack of education around the benefits of sleep, that's the problem. Mm. So we need to improve education as far back as schools. And I think it's the research is only really just caught up in terms of what lack of sleep, the correlation between lack of sleep and disease, like obesity, cancer, things like that. And you read it and you're like, oh my God, like this should be like, this should be kind of public awareness, education straight into schools. So that's what they've missed here. The angle should have been the importance of sleep, and they have every right to be talking about that because they're a mattress brand.
Yeah.
We need to help existing generations and future generations to understand the importance of it, because the research is now there to say you need it. Like, the deficits of sleep and the consequences are severe. There's a book by Dr. Matthew Walker, highly recommend it.
So I'll put a link in the notes.
There is a plug, and that has, not to be too wanky, but that has changed my life in terms of my perceptions and the importance of sleep. Come on!
Without a doubt, one of the most annoying ads, if not the most annoying ad, was the Go Compare.
Go Compare!
Ad.
You did it.
My best
baritone.
Well.
There you are.
Very good.
And not surprisingly, therefore, we reckon the brief that was given to Droga5 was, don't lose him, but make him less annoying. So, Ben, tell us what has happened.
Well, this is the second time they've done that, I think, where they tried to get rid of him in the past. There was a really bad ad where Stuart Pearce kicks a football at him. And it kicks him in the balls. It's absolutely crazy. I hope I'm not imagining that.
I don't know. I need to look at this.
Yeah, I think it might be one of my weird
Psycho
dreams.
Psycho Pierce.
Yeah. But they tried to get rid of him in the past and they brought him back because he's so recognisable.
Well, yeah, it's a massive, you know, they've invested literally so much in that brand. It would have been foolhardy to kill him off.
Exactly. But also it might have been that Droga5 were like, well, you don't need to kill him off. You just need to sort of change the way in which we do it. And actually, there is...
That was how clever it was.
Yeah.
And then it started to go wrong.
Well, there's two things to this. There's the TV ad, and then there's the...
I've only seen the TV ad.
And then there's the out-of-home and the press and the digital and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, no, you've shown me the out-of-home.
So the TV ad is quite sort of like a bit... sort of bit dark in its sort of style in terms of how it looks. It's kind of got quite a left field sense of humor to it.
Yeah.
But it fundamentally, the one thing it does, it shows a car actually crashing.
Mm.
And I didn't really think of that when I first looked at it, other than the sort of, like, you know, they're focusing on one aspect of the offer of Go Compare, which is the £250 sort of cover for, there's a specific thing that they're focusing on, which is smart. And so smart that I couldn't remember what it was, but anyway. They've shown a car crashing, and I didn't think twice about that. And
actually, I'm sure people will watch it. It's not just a car crashing; it's a car flipping.
Yeah.
It's actually quite traumatic to watch. The car hits a tree. The car does a somersault and lands on its head. I mean, that is my worst nightmare. You see it happen on the motorway. You think, oh my God, did anybody get out of that alive? It's dreadful.
And it's quite visceral. And they're kind of so like. And in the age of outrage and sort of people feeling very sensitive about everything they see, but you're right, this is fundamentally quite a sort of disturbing sort of vision for any kind of driver. It's got quite a lot of complaints. I don't know how many. I only saw yesterday that this started to get quite a few complaints.
Do you think it would be dark if it's the case that they think, given that people find him annoying, they wanted to see him suffer? When I first saw it, and then it's probably only one other kind of sector of adverts that you'd see an accident in. And that's injury lawyers for you or ambulance chasers. That's where I went. They're the only adverts I know of that would show accidents, which I think is, I don't agree with at all. Obviously, things like the AA, you can see like the aftermath of stuff, which is very, very different. But to show an actual accident, I didn't like.
I'm surprised Clearcast cleared it. I associate Gio Campario with humour. And therefore, to immediately go from, because I remember the last ads being funny, annoying maybe, but funny. And then to take that asset and place it in a far from funny situation was wrong in my estimation.
Ah!
We never know what's around the corner, which is why Go Compare now gives £250 free excess cover for when the unexpected happens.
So a brave move from my favourite snack brand. And I know we've had a crisp off in the past, but can I just share with you my obsession? I think I told you this, that before Doritos, for that is the brand of which we are referring to, before Doritos was actually a product in the UK, I used to get my friends to bring them over from America. I remember once asking a friend to bring quite a lot in his suitcase because I just could not get enough of that cheesy powder. And the best bit, after eating an entire family pack of Doritos, is to lick your fingers. Oh, God, that is heaven.
So I'm sorry to say, Mark, this isn't targeted at you.
Oh,
obviously, given this anecdote, the powder you referenced is a big part of
the
it.
The gold dust.
Yeah.
So cheesy gold dust.
So this is Doritos, as you've just said, Mark. Amazingly, it's created in-house, actually.
And I'll
go out there and say this is definitely above average for an in-house creation. So well done there. And yeah, the interesting bit here is that they've basically removed any branding, any tagline from the advert. I think in the news articles, it's around targeting Gen Z, who I guess are well documented about not responding well to overtly branded. So the advert feels quite Adidas, Nike, lots of young people running around in cool urban environments doing cool stuff, some good after effects and things like that. And effectively, there's no branding, there's no tagline, but it's playing on every other part of their brand. So the kind of the triangular shape, the powder you referenced, the flavours, the feelings, there's still a lot of colour in there as well.
Oh, you're making me mouthwater now.
Exactly. And in fairness, like you see the pack and you're like, oh yeah, chili.
What, the chili? The chili hot heat wave ones. Yeah. Oh yeah.
In fairness, I usually have those at the Subway, so I'm actually getting quite hungry. So yeah, let's debate that then, because it feels tonally and visually like right for the audience. It's definitely not the first time a brand has gone, hey, we're going to do an advert without our branding, but actually you're going to get slapped around the face with it, because every Facebook post is going to have sponsored from Doritos UK. So it's not quite going to live true to its intentions. But yeah, so go on. You think
I don't know whether I believe that millennials, whoever it is, Generation Z, whichever one they're aiming at, are turned off by overt branding. I don't believe that. But anyway, I just think this is really clever on a kind of a double think level. So they've taken the brand off. They've taken the name off, but they haven't taken the icon off. And we know, Ben, this is one for you, but you know, I'm trained to understand that iconography is so much more powerful than, in actual fact, than the words. So just removing the Doritos word from an ad actually does little to detract from the transmission of meaning and memory encoding, because that triangular icon is so well ingrained that they don't need to stick the word on it. And I reckon as a result, the branding will be enhanced. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, we MasterCard have done the same. Yeah. MasterCard have taken off their name and just kept with the sort of the two circles,
yeah.
Interlocking circles. So, I mean, I think, yeah, in theory, I just don't, why are they calling it an anti-ad? Like, that's the cool thing. That pisses me off, because it's kind of just like, it's not an anti-ad, it's an ad, it's just ad. Without your
it's
name.
It's a really clever
ad. It's a good ad.
But that's why it's clever as well, because they're appealing to the generation by saying, hey, we are iconoclastic, we're going against the grain, and we're doing all this cool stuff, and we don't need to stick our name on it. But you've got a really clever logo instead of a name. You don't need your name.
But hopefully that then becomes, they just use the logo and they don't have to say logo goes here, and they call out the fact they're not using their name
anymore.
It's
just clever.
But I don't, this anti-ad kit, like sort of this trend around sort of like being sort of almost sort of trying to break the fourth wall with the audience and
it
go,
is that.
We are not interested, we don't want to be seen as an advertiser, or we want to get rid of our own ads, because you know all this kind of, I just don't buy it. I think it's a load of rubbish, and I think it's also very negative towards the industry.
Because this is an ad with no logos, no jingles, no gimmicks, just those red and blue bags with the stuff you love in it.
So there you have it, the Porn Chicken Dementia episode.
And crisps.
And crisps.
I mean, every episode gets to talking about crisps now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think we're obviously hungry, aren't we, when we record it, so we end up talking about food.
Yeah.
Well, a good food episode. Thank you very much. Yeah. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tangy cheese Doritos with chili con carne. So oh. you get tangy cheese Doritos, all the spicy ones, and you use that. You crumble them on top of your chili con carne.
Oh yeah,
and
I can
you
imagine
scoop
that's
it
nice.
In.
Yeah.
That stuff. That's
I
amazing.
Like a big jar of mayonnaise.
What?
Yeah.
That is less.
You're going to go home and try this now. Just dip the kind of corner into a tub of mayonnaise.
I mean,
mayonnaise.
I'm all for a dip, but mayonnaise.
Yeah, mayonnaise.
Well, okay, I'll go one further. I'll see your mayonnaise and I'll raise you, laughing cow.
Oh, that sounds
which,
nice.
Which
yeah.
you can, which you use.
That's cheesy, cheesy, cheesy.
Yeah, exactly.
Double cheese.
Well, I would go the heat wave with laughing cow. Dip it in.
Melted laughing cow.
No.
A bit got, like kind got, of homemade fondue.
It's got to be cold and still sort of wobbly from the triangle.
I'm going to stick with my heat wave just laid out next to my Subway sandwich. That's fine.
Oh, that's good.